All right. Thanks everybody for joining us today. This is the May NYSO Open Teleconference, and our topic this month is the TC46, the ISO TC46 meetings that took place week before last in Ottawa, Canada. And our guest, not really a guest, but we'll call him that, is the NYSO Executive Director, Todd Carpenter. And Todd and I will have a conversation about the meetings which we both took part in Ottawa. So Todd, welcome.
Thank you. Always good to talk
as usual. Yes, it is always good to talk to you. So I'm going to just start from the basics, and then we can get some more sophisticated discussions, I guess. What is ISO TC46, and why does it exist?
Sure. Okay. So let's start from the very basics. ISO, the International Organization of Standardization, is a Geneva-based international organization, nonprofit, that creates international standards. It does so in a variety of fields and domains, everything from airline parts to fluid dynamics to Chinese medicine to tea. And one of the groups that works within that structure is focused on publishing information, libraries, and archives. And that group is conveniently numbered 46. So the group that does information and documentation, so ISO numbers all of its topic technical committees, all of its subcommittees, and all of its working groups, basically the next committee gets the next number. So the 46th group that was organized under ISO since its foundation was TC46, and that's why it's called TC46. It was the 46th group that was organized. Dates back to, I believe, 1948 or thereabouts. It is one of the oldest technical committees within ISO. And it publishes, I think, about 125 standards within its technical committees and subcommittees. There are about 40 countries that participate in this group directly. So 40 countries that vote on and nominate experts for different working groups within this group, as well as there are another 33 countries that are observing members, which means that they can kind of listen in and nominate people to participate, but they don't actually get to vote on the standards that are developed within this. And also, their participation is somewhat limited. So that's sort of the scope of TC46.
And so why is NYSO involved in TC46? What's the NYSO connection?
Every country, so the countries that participate in this standards development work internationally are all represented by their national member bodies. And those national member bodies are the standard setting organizations within each country. Within the United States, that's the American National Standards Institute, or ANSI. In Britain, the UK, that is the British Standards Institute. It's DIN in Germany, or AFNOR in France. These are different national standard setting bodies. And every national body, well, almost every national body, divides up its responsibility in different groups. So there'll be a group that works on TC46 work. There's another that works on, say, airline parts. There's another that works on, tea. Those are kind of, other countries call them mirror committees. In the United States, they're called technical advisory groups, or TAGs. And so NYSO is designated the U.S. TAG for TC46. and all of its subcommittees. So NISO is responsible for the six groups within TC46. So that's TC46 and its five subcommittees. NISO also represents another subcommittee in a different technical committee, but that's not the topic of this conversation. NISO and its membership vote on standards or nominate experts to working groups, and we manage the interaction with between the United States and its community, and represent and create U.S. positions on these standards in the ISO community for publishing in libraries and information, documentation, and archives.
Great. That's good. So you mentioned subcommittees briefly. Who are these subcommittees? And what happens if there's a standard that doesn't fit into a subcommittee?
Okay. So I mentioned there are five subcommittees within TC46. So TC46, again, technical committee. The subcommittees focus on specific areas of work or specific portfolios of standards under that broad rubric. So there is SC4, which is the subcommittee focusing on technical interoperability. This is where standards around RFID and standards around discovery, like Z3950, are standards.
Interlibrary loan as well.
Et cetera. There is another, the second subcommittee is SC8. This is focused on quality and statistics and performance evaluation. The next is SC9, which is focused on identification and description. So these are identifier standards and vocabulary standards. ISBN, ISSN, DOIs are all under SC9. The fourth subcommittee is focused on requirements for document storage and conditions for preservation. That's SC10. So this is where international standards for paper permanence, for archival boxes, and records, information, actual physical storage of documents resides. And the last is SC11. This is archives and records management. This is more focused on business processes and management of business information and the gathering and structuring of archives and that community. They've been focused a lot recently on digital archiving and the digital archiving or the archiving of digital materials and the management structures around archives and managing those issues.
Sounds good. So that's a good introduction to all of the subcommittees. Well, what about standards that don't fit into subcommittee?
Sure. Things that don't fit into the subcommittees or have...
And maybe some examples of things that aren't part of the subcommittee.
Sure. There's other things that don't fit neatly into the rubric of those five subcommittees. Those standards are governed by working groups under the technical committee itself. So there is a working group that is focused on the codes of country names. So you might recognize these as top level domains for internet. So .co.uk, .de, .cn for Canada. These are country codes and have a vast number of business applications outside of internet names. There's a group that does that. There's another group that does transliteration standards. So what is a standard for converting, say, Arabic or Korean into Latin characters? Another is focused on the presentation of periodicals, which is very broad, and other information governance issues. So those are the types of things that happen at the technical committee level. So that's where things that don't fall into the other subcommittees get managed and worked on.
Great. So that's a great overview of the TC. So back to the Ottawa meetings. What happens during the plenary week, and what's so important about getting together in one place?
Yeah. So the plenary week, there's a meeting. There's a week long series of meetings, and this meeting happens every May, usually. Sometimes it floats into June, but usually May. Of the community of national representatives to get together. And there are, as I said, the five subcommittees. So each of those subcommittees has a plenary meeting, as well as a variety of working group meetings for the members of each of those subcommittees. So in Ottawa, there were 5 days of working group meetings. So individual experts working on ISSN or EPUB. Those working groups got together and focused on moving the work forward. And then the subcommittees each had a plenary meeting where it's more important than just administrative work, but where direction is set for the subcommittee, where decisions about initiatives moving forward get decided. And then finally, the week ends with a plenary meeting of the technical committee, again, where both logistic information is handled, like who's going to manage what group and under what time frame, but also really important strategic issues are discussed, like what is ISO going to do with digital standards, for example. Those are the issues that are discussed in those plenary conversations. And it's a great opportunity for those communities to get together. And, you know, anyone who's participated in a working group meeting knows that while you can get a lot done on the phone, you get a lot more done when you're in person. So there's comment resolution meetings and things along those lines. It's a very busy, busy week. Nettie?
Oh, sorry, I was on mute. I just asked you a question. What were some meetings that you attend? You were pretty busy. I was busy, but I think you were busier. What were some meetings that you attended? And if you remember any meetings that took place that you weren't able to attend, for some examples.
Oh my goodness. So many meetings. Let's see. It was just...
Luckily, they were all in the same building.
Yeah, it was all... And I should point out the meeting last week was held at the Library and Archives of Canada, and I should thank our gracious hosts in Canada at the Library and Archives. It was a fantastic space, and they did a great job.
Yeah.
Never been to Ottawa. I encourage you to go and certainly stop by and visit our friends at LSC. So in terms of the meetings that I participated in, the early part of the week, it was primarily focused on working group meetings. There was an ISSN meeting. There's a revision process for the ISSN standard, where we were going through the comments that were received in the last balloting period. Similarly, a meeting on rights information and the display of rights information. Again, we kind of went through the comments that have been received in that. There was a meeting on the principles of identification, which is the project that I'm actually convener of, looking at how do we define broadly why ISO is developing identification standards and what we mean by certain things and what are the values of around creating those identifier standards.
So just to pop in for a minute, that's interesting because that, as I understand, that's not actually going to be a standard. It will be a technical report?
Yes.
Sort of a position paper?
It's more than a position paper. But it doesn't have the weight, the normative weight of a standard. It is more guidance than it is requirements. Technical reports don't include requirement statements like you shall do this or you must do that. It is more the way we're kind of putting the document together. There should be ISO standards when it comes to identification should have things like preservation should be, you know, the persistence of the identifier should be considered and should be paramount. And then you get into lively conversations about what does it mean to be persistent?
Yes. I remember it got pretty theoretical pretty fast.
And how long should something be persistent? And what elements are we persisting? Are we persisting like the thing? We're not actually persisting the thing, we're persisting the concept of the thing. You don't necessarily need the original copy of a piece of artwork to have a notion that this piece of artwork existed and you want to maintain information about that thing. We're getting into lots of nitty gritty details in that regard. And then the later part of the week got into these plenary meetings where you discuss the progress of the work of different working groups, but also what are strategic issues around those projects and where are things going? What should we do about work identification? What's the status of the International Standard Text Code and what do we do in terms of revising that standard? How do we think about its application? Moving forward. So those are the conversations that took place the later part of the week in the plenary meetings that took place.
Okay. So I think you, in all the description, I think you didn't mention what role NISO plays in SC9.
I didn't.
And could you talk? I'm not sure how you missed that. I'm not sure how I missed you missing that. But I think that's pretty interesting and important. So could you describe that role?
Yeah.
And what SC9 does.
Yes. So
again,
as I mentioned, SC9 is the group that does identification and description. So this
what are some standards that are part of its group?
So that is responsible for content identification codes, ISBN for books, ISSN for serials, ISMN for musical works. So that would be like a book of the musical notations for a score or something. ISAN for audiovisual works. The ISRC for recording codes. So every track on every CD or Apple iTunes that you've ever purchased had an ISRC. What NISO's role is in that regard is we serve as the secretariat. So we are a neutral body that administers the work of SC9. We're responsible for the documents and circulating the documents and circulating ballots and making sure that the working groups are proceeding along their work plan. This is sort of an unusual or kind of interesting role for NISO, in that we are a neutral arbiter of the work, but we also participate as a national body in contributing U.S. expertise and comments and national perspectives on this work as well. So we're kind of a participant, but we're also the people that just kind of keep the process moving. And that's not unusual. Every subcommittee and every technical committee has a secretariat. Mm-hmm. And that's just a country that's responsible for volunteering, if you will, to manage the work in a neutral fashion. So we set up ballots and we send out documents and we kind of work with the conveners on making sure that things are supposed to happen. And we, manage the meeting. So the SC9 plenary is a meeting that I support Stella Griffiths, who is the chairperson of that committee. She's
from England.
Yes.
UK.
She's from the UK. She's the head of the International ISBN Agency. She serves as chair and I serve as the secretary or committee manager, I think is the revised title. But it's our job to manage the work.
Right. I think it's interesting. It just gives you a really close view of the dynamics or the kinds of different things at play, which is, I think, an interesting role to have in the development of standards.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, there is a fair bit of extra work, but it also allows us an opportunity to help drive the work a little bit. I can ping the working group conveners and try and push work along more aggressively if things are faltering. So there's, that's one positive element of this, of being involved at that level.
Right. Let's see. What kinds of things we haven't covered yet that you would like to say about TC46 or the Standards Week in Ottawa?
Let's see. I think the one important thing to note is the sort of there is sometimes a progression of NISO standards moving to ISO standards. So, for example, ISSN or Z3950 was a U.S. standard, was created by and developed within the NISO community, and that got promoted is maybe not a great word, but got adopted at an international level and got developed as an international standard and promoted as an international standard. There's a variety of NISO standards that this has happened to. Dublin Core, Z3950, serials numbers, MARC records. All of these have kind of grown out of the US community. It's interesting to reflect on the role there and how things are slightly different and why the U.S. might want to maintain a U.S. standard versus an international standard in that regard. For example, the international community operates slightly differently in some respects. So how statistics are developed or how national libraries might be running their infrastructure. It might be more centrally organized than things are here in the United States. And that might have implications on how standards are implemented. RFID is a good example here, where national, some countries might have more robust central governance of libraries and can implement certain technological infrastructure that can be more rigid than it might be the case here in the United States. So how those things get dealt with at an international level is a kind of interesting element of discussion, shall we say. There are a variety of reasons, though, that the United States might want to keep a U.S. version of a national standard while the international standard is promoted. One reason, or one rationale, is that if it's developed by the United States, by NISO, for example, we can make that standard available for free, whereas ISO standards they're available at call. You know, they're
not open.
They're not open, and they're publications that people have to pay for. This is not to disparage ISO's business model, but ours is slightly different. And maintaining that free and open access to U.S. standards is valuable from NISO's perspective. So while we might want to extend a standard's reach into international communities, we might also want to continue to make those standards available for free and here in the United States. So this is kind of interesting questions at play when we get into U.S. versus international publication.
Yep, that's true. So I'm wondering if our audience has any, or folks on the call, have any questions or things that you'd like to know about TC46, ISO standards, NISO's role. Opening the floor.
Hi, this is Brian O'Leary from the Book Industry Study Group.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
Hi. I just wanted to say thanks for the work that you did to give ISCC and Sebastian Potts a hearing at the at the meeting. I think it's an interesting approach that they've taken, and we're certainly looking forward to the work that's going to come out over the next 2 or 3 years.
Great. Thank you. So just for a bit of background to those on the call, the ISCC is the International Standard Content Code. This is was a proposed standard that was put forward by the Germans. This is a project led by Sebastian Posch, who's a German systems developer in the publishing space. And he's put forward an idea about using algorithmically defined content identification tied to a blockchain management of the associated metadata for content identification. Is a really interesting project, as Brian mentioned. And thank you, Brian, for your comments. It was initially proposed as a standard. And during the meeting, the plenary meeting, there was a presentation by Sebastian about the ISCC and where the project could go. It was decided to enter it as a project within SC9, but not put it on a standards development track, because the sense was that the technology is relatively immature and there isn't an understandable use case at this stage. So a group was organized, led by,
Beate?
Yes.
Beate Rusch.
Radarush from Germany to explore this as a topic and look at some of the use case questions, some of the technological questions, the standards questions about its scope for up to a 3-year period, although I'm pretty sure they won't work for 3 years, to look at what could happen with that as a standard. So if there are people in the United States who are interested in participating in that, you know, feel free to reach out to me and we can, we'll be issuing a call for experts to work on that. So thank you, Brian.
Any other comments, questions? I guess that makes one for me. What's the if a NISO member or non-member would like to become more engaged in standards creation at the international level, how should they proceed? Pay attention to our notes?
Yeah. We regularly send out, as part of Newsline, a list of new projects, new initiatives. Participation in international standards activities is generally limited to those who have a NISO affiliation. So you can't just walk in off the street and say, oh, I want to be part of X international project. You need to have a NISO affiliation. That could be indirect through an organization like BISG or the American Library Association, et cetera. An affiliation is required. And then simply, you know, with that affiliation, request to participate as a U.S. expert. That is then vetted by the NISO staff. And participation in an ISO group isn't necessarily much different than participation in a NISO project. Almost all of the meetings are virtual. You know, outside of the plenary meetings, most working groups don't get together in person. A few do occasionally, but there's always there needs to be, it's a requirement, opportunity for remote participation to those who can't, say, make it to an individual meeting in Canada or Milan or wherever the group gets together. So reasonable accommodations need to be provided, but I would say the biggest challenges to participating in these groups are time zones. You know, it's not really right that every meeting needs to be East Coast Central Time, and then therefore our friends in China and Japan and Australia are working at 2 o'clock in the morning. So occasionally there's a, you know, 5 a.m. meetings. And then the other is sometimes just cultural and linguistic barriers. But almost everyone who's engaging in these efforts has a pretty good fluency in English. But sometimes, you know, more or less... but, you know, to be perfectly honest, I think the participants outside the United States do an amazing job at working within the linguistics of meetings usually run in English, far better than I would ever do working in a meeting in, say, German or Chinese. So
that's true.
Kudos to them for all of their work and efforts in accommodation, I would say, to working in an English-based system.
Great. So we will, I guess, start to wrap it up. We're still interested if you've got any questions about TC46 and or any questions about NISO in general. I'm going to shut off the recording, but talk